It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Mondays at 3 p.m., win, lose, or draw. One of our favorite guests joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is Browns analyst Nathan Zagurney, joins us now. Hi, Nathan. How you doing, bud?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm doing well. How about yourselves?
We're doing all right here. We got some energy going on a Monday. I think we're doing a little better coming off the bye than the Browns did yesterday. Did you, considering how well the first three quarters went, Nathan, did you have any sense that that collapse would happen in the fourth quarter?
No, of course not. And you know, if I would have told you that Jameis Winston was going to throw for about 400 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, in fact, that the Browns were going to win the turnover battle by two in this game, it's kind of unfathomable that they would lose this one by 21. And obviously there were a lot of things that contributed to it, special teams. You know, Dustin Hopkins missing two field goals, really three, but that he normally would make. You give up another huge punt return. Luckily that wasn't a touchdown, although they ended up scoring on that drive after a 53-yard punt return. And then, you know, you made Taysom Hill look kind of like, you know, Jim Brown. I mean, Taysom Hill was unbelievable. 200, he accounted for over 200 yards of offense, three touchdowns. I mean, I don't know if anybody's had a game where they've accounted for single-handedly 206 yards of offense, three touchdowns, tying his career high with three on the ground, and threw an interception and lost a fumble inside the opponent's, you know, 10-yard line all in the same game. So kind of a crazy game for Taysom Hill. But no, I did not see that coming. I think that it was, obviously, it's another disappointing performance in a very disappointing season.
Yeah, Nathan, it's so weird because offensively, there's just so many things I want to talk to you about that went well. I want to talk about Jerry Jeudy. I want to talk about Jameis almost throwing for 400 yards. Like, there's just a lot to take away that if they didn't end up with the fourth quarter going the way it did, we could talk all day long about.
Yeah, and it was a good performance on offense. And I think one of the reasons, you know, I certainly wanted to give DTR an opportunity, but one of the reasons they stuck with Jameis because I think it's allowing you to see what you actually have at wide receiver. And guess what? It's pretty good. Jerry Jeudy, 6 for 142, the second highest total of his career's first 100-yard game as a Brown. Chief had 9 for 81. Elijah Moore, 6 for 66, and a great touchdown catch on that 30-yarder from Jameis. Cedric Tillman had 3 for 47. You know, you actually got a lot of people involved, and, you know, that core four, as I'll call it, certainly looks more than capable of being a good NFL receiving core. And Jerry Jeudy looks like he absolutely can be a number one receiver for you. Cedric Tillman looks like he can be, you know, a 1A type receiver for you after his previous three games to this one. So this is a team that, yeah, there's a lot of talent, and I thought Jameis played well. This was one of those games where, you know, Baltimore, he definitely put the ball in harm's way a little bit and got fortunate, but in this one, he really didn't. There were a couple balls that were tipped or bounced around or, you know, slightly ill-advised, but for the most part was in complete command, saw the field very, very well, and delivered the football. And you saw guys make plays not only, you know, down the field, but then run after the catch opportunities because the ball was hitting them in stride. I thought our offensive line did a great job. And, you know, to me, the biggest disappointment in this game is even more than the outcome is the loss of DeJuan Jones, who was absolutely vaporizing Chase Young and Carl Granderson and Peyton Turner in this game. He did not allow a single pressure while he was out there. He was phenomenal. It's just a shame that, you know, Wyatt steps on a foot, so he's off balance, gets shoved back, and ends up, you know, breaking the ankle of DeJuan Jones. I'm sick about losing him because, to me, at this point, a lot of this is going to be about seeing who's in your core for the future. And in 1 week, to lose Mike Hall in a practice injury and then, you know, Dewan Jones, your starting left tackle, and I think left tackle of the future, to a broken ankle is just, that's devastating in a 1 week period.
So I'm glad you said, because we actually said the same thing when Mike, you know, went out late last week of like, man, that was one of the guys we wanted to see with eight games to go. But specific to Dewan, was it three games at left tackle? Was there enough good for the Browns to just make him the left tackle and just move on to other positions? Or do you think that because it's only three games, maybe you have to bring in some competition and, you know, keep an open mind with him, specifically at left tackle?
I mean, he's got the endorsement of the only person whose endorsement I care about at left tackle, and that's Joe Thomas. He thinks he's looked great. He saw improvement all 3 weeks, and this was his best performance at that position in those three games. So, no, I feel very confident about him. You know, he's gonna work hard to get back. He's one of my favorite guys on the team. He's a quality young man, and I think he's very, very talented. And so I think he'll go into next season with Dewan Jones as your left tackle. Yeah, and he'll be ready for all of that.
Defensively, Nathan, it just seems like there's a lot of miscommunication there. I don't know how they get this turned around, but it just wasn't where it needs to be.
No, and I think, you know, there weren't like necessarily like a classic bust. You know, you lost sight of people at a couple times, and obviously the catch and run by Valdes-Scantling fits the bill when Carr's able to get outside of the pocket and break contain. To me, it's just that when you give up 214 yards rushing and 7.6 yards a carry, you know, Taysom Hill averaged over 15 yards after or 17 yards after contact per carry in this game. That's crazy to me. I don't even understand that. There were times in this game where, you know, the Browns, as Kevin Stefanski said, they got out executed and, you know, they got out physicaled, and that's what you can't have that happen. And, you know, I'd even say on the offense side, think about that first fourth down. You're trying to get 1 yard and mm-hmm. you get blown back off the ball and you can't even get it. That to me was more concerning. You knew this team had two weapons. Well, three. Marquez Valdes-Scantling was really the only NFL wide receiver on this roster, period. Like, just straight up, period. Last week, he had two catches that went for 106 yards. This week, he has a 71-yard touchdown against you. You knew you had to worry about him, but then really it was going to be all about Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill. Not say Derek Carr can't play, because he can. You give him a clean pocket, he'll kill you, and that's exactly what he did. The Browns did not generate much pressure in this game at all, but you knew the ball was going to go to Alvin Kamara or Taysom Hill pretty much all the time. Kamara gets 20 touches, Hill has 15, and those guys account for basically, you know, almost 300 yards, three touchdowns. Part of me is at a loss for words. This was a game where you had said, you know, the offense, even though they ended up with 14 points, which is bizarre, and obviously we know Dustin Hopkins missed the field goals, and then that changes the calculation late in the game. You know, you should have been in the mid-20s, but you got to be better on third down, especially in the red zone, and you've got to be able to finish these drives out. But this was a game where the offense, you know, certainly played well enough on some level for you to be able to win the game, and it was really your defense that gave up 8.2 yards a play. I mean, you put up 443 yards and you don't turn the football over, you typically, and win the turnover differential by two, you should win that game. And the Browns not only didn't win it, they lost by 21. But that was the thing to me. Only got into the red zone once, and you know, third downs, you were 3 of 13. They were 5 of 10. You were 1 of 3 on fourth downs. It adds up to a very disappointing loss down in New Orleans.
Nathan Segura, Browns analyst on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, obviously, Kevin today answered questions about effort, and he chalked it up to execution. He chalked it up to being out physicaled. Considering the way you lost that game, considering it was your ninth loss in 11 games, is there enough fight left in this team to stay competitive for the final seven games of the season?
There better be. I mean, they're professionals. This is your job. Your job is not to play until you're out of contention. It's to play a full season. And, you know, you're putting tape out there for not only yourself and the Browns and everybody, you know, in the National Football League, because that's what this team's going to have to make a lot of evaluations at the end of the season. And I certainly hope, you know, you've got couple of primetime games coming up. Thursday night here. You've got Monday night in Denver. You've got Thursday night in Cincinnati. My guess is the Sunday night against the Dolphins will get flexed, but you got three national TV games. You got one coming up right now, Thursday night against the 8-2 Pittsburgh Steelers, your rival. You got to get up for these games, and you've got to bring it. You've got to bring the competition. You've got to bring the physicality. I think you owe it to, you know, these great fans And you owe it to yourselves and your teammates to come out there and give maximum effort in the rest of the way.
I know it's early in the week, but we do have the quick turnaround, obviously, as you mentioned, with Thursday Night Football. What's your area of emphasis for the Browns against the Steelers on Thursday?
Match their physicality, match their intensity. I think that was what got away from you in New Orleans. I don't think you matched the physicality of the New Orleans Saints. And that's not a team that's, quite frankly, known for being real physical. Well, the Steelers are. And so you've got to bring it, match their intensity and their physicality. You do that, and the chips are going to fall where they may. But that, to me, has to be at least a starting point for this football team on Thursday night.
Nathan, my partner here, is a nihilist. He believes in nothing. He poo-poos this 15-0
like
start.
Coco?
He is just like Uwe Coco. He's here to fix Dyna Cable. But he does not believe in the 15-0 start.
It sounds exhausting.
As anything important, are you all in on this 15-0 start for the Cavaliers like I am?
Yeah, it's great. I've been fortunate enough to go to a couple of games already. The atmosphere is great. I was there Friday night when they beat the Bulls, and you know Donovan was in the zone, and the threes were falling, and the Bulls, I mean, I was at half. I think you were up like four, and we're shooting, you know, 70% from the field and 60% from three. I'm like, what? How are the Bulls even close to this? But yeah, this team, they are very, very fun to watch. Exon has them playing, obviously, at an unbelievable level. The ball movement is beautiful. They seem to have fun. And listen, little secret in sports, teams have fun when they're winning. And so when you're 15-0, everybody's having fun. Everybody's getting along. It's great. It's an awesome environment. They're doing a great job. And yes, I'm very excited about it. The thing that's tough is, you know, in an NBA season, what, we're in November, you really don't get into things of real consequence until May. So we still have a long way to go before we get to see the games that really matter. Like, this is a team now where you're thinking, okay, Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Championship, right? I mean, this is the top four start in NBA history. So I'm very excited about the Cavs. And, you know, you knock on wood, they got to stay healthy. But this is a team that certainly looks like it has what it takes to go the distance. And with the two bigs and with the two guards playing the way they are, man, they are a fun, fun team to watch. And they can match up, I feel like, with anybody.
So now that I know you love the streak too, that we're streakers together.
That's right.
I think I know how I can. You got to become a cupper.
Is he
like
a cupper
me
as well? We're streakers and cuppers.
So the cup. So if you put a lot of stock into the NBA Cup games, I think that adds a little extra excitement to the early kind of the general. You know, it's early.
They're losing me with the courts. I don't like the cup courts anywhere in the NBA. The courts are dreadful.
They are. They're not good.
Yeah. They're not good. No, the cup thing is certainly a fun thing, but, you know, is Tuesday night in Boston, is that a cup game?
It is.
Oh, it is.
Oh, you better. Tuesdays and Fridays. You better believe it.
All right. So that's going to be a tough court in Boston. I'm just excited for that game in general because I think that's what we're, you know, right now, if teams go on their current trajectories or the expected trajectories by the end of 82 games, that's going to be the Eastern Conference Finals. So that I'm very excited about that game. Coming in there at 15-0, you know you're going to get the defending champ's best shot. It's going to be, I think, a lot of fun.
Sounds like he's a cupper and a streaker too, Nathan. You're the best.
I don't know. I'm going to call myself a half cupper. I'm a
half cupper.
Streaker, yes.
Half cupper.
Does that just make you a cup or a purr? Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll have to work on it. Great stuff, buddy. Appreciate
you. Thanks, guys.
Nathan Zagura, Browns analyst on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's a streaker. He's a cup. And interesting stuff with the Browns. We'll react to what he had to say about the 2-9 Browns next on 92.3 The Fan. Really great stuff with Nathan there. And, you know, when you said, I don't know, it was something that when you said in that first hour that you thought Jameis had a good game.
Well, I'll play it back for you, essentially, of what I said. It was yeah, thank you. Now start over. And this is what I said around 2:42. I said as hard as an athlete, I always think in these moments where we expected him to be sad and we expected him to be the part of a post-game losing quarterback that just got demolished. But there had to have been a part of Jameis Winston that inside was like, yeah, I did my part, though. Like, I had a great game. And then you kind of clapped back on the idea that it was a great game. And you brought up the third down percentage and you brought up a couple other things. And it's like, I think what that game showed me, Nick, more than anything, and I think last night watching Joe Burrow was kind of a very similar thing. You ever wonder about complementary football and you talk about how all phases have to be working and sometimes we're like, well, just have a great quarterback and everything is answered? Jameis did everything that you're supposed to do from an offensive standpoint, and you came nowhere close in that game. Joe Burrow last night did everything you're supposed to do from an offensive standpoint, and it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my it's the word great. I think I thought it was a fine performance. I don't think it was awful.
Yeah, sometimes I get a little bit hyperbolic.
Well, but I think a lot of people are grading this off of who we know Jameis can be when it's bad, which is we're grading him off his last performance. For instance, when you had no frame of reference, you only had the one drive against prevent defense against Cincinnati, people spun the line of hope with Jameis going to the Baltimore game, and then he had the best game Jameis can have, which was, yeah, he almost got in trouble a couple times. They dropped the ball. He got a couple touchdowns and threw for a bunch of yards, right? And you got the win. And then, so everybody going to the Chargers game was like, hey, he's got a chance to be the guy. And then he played the antithetical option to that, yeah, which was putrid.
Yeah.
And turnover heavy and not enough yards. And you and I both thought he would play better.
I mean, there was only one way he could go, which was up from there, and the Chargers had a good defense.
But I think when it comes to – but I think everyone's grading him off. He looks so bad against the Chargers that when he doesn't turn the ball over and throws for a bunch of yards – and, again – he made some really nice big throws, specifically the Elijah Moore throw and catch. That was a great throw and a great catch. The problem is you scored 14 points. And we can say Dustin Hopkins missed 97 kicks. Yeah, but it's the quarterback's job to get the ball into the end zone. And way too many drives stalled out at like the 35, the 40, the 50. And then when you had a chance to put it into the end zone, you had a chance right there. I mean, you got the gilded chance, right?
Sure.
Dustin misses the 32-yard field goal. And this was, by the way, the funniest sequence of events ever.
In my head watching, by the way, I had predicted that Jameis was going to throw a pick there. Yeah. It seemed like the perfect opportunity for Jameis to throw an interception.
Which is, okay.
And so he almost did.
This is playing into it. But so Dustin misses the 32-yard field goal. Then that gets called back on a penalty. So then you have first and goal. And you had three chances to get in the end zone. And you don't do it. And the most telling thing in that spot is, you needed touchdowns. You knew, even against the Saints, your kicker's missing field goals.
But we also know Jameis is just not, I mean, there is, you have to at some point realize, and I know you know this, but like Jameis is never going to be a perfect quarterback. That just doesn't exist.
Well, no.
So maybe I'm judging off of what I expected with a Jameis game. Is that maybe what we're doing here? Or am I getting too blinded by the almost 400 yards? Because I'm open to that idea as well.
I think it's the yardage. It
might be, because it's a lot of yards, Nick.
I don't want to say it's empty calories. I don't want to say it's empty calories. But if you have almost 400 yards and you score 14 points, you have to... Plus, with what they were 25% from third down on, like that's... When we start talking about third and fourth down, I put a lot of that on the quarterback.
I think it's simpler than this. I think Derek Carr played a really, really good game as well. Derek Carr had six interceptions, had two touchdowns. He was passer rating in the 129. I mean, Derek Carr really was great. And so it kind of was what last night's game turned into between the Bengals and the Chargers. You had Herbert dealing on one end. You had Burrow dealing on another. And when both quarterbacks are just that good, and Jameis at the end of it, by every metric you can come up with, whether that is yards, whether that is QBR, whether that is passer rating, he looked the part yesterday. He did his job. It comes on the defensive side of the ball, which the Browns were nowhere close.
Except on third and fourth downs. That's huge. Oh, and by the way, and the place where it matters the most, which is we know you don't have a running game. You're in for 66 yards.
The third downs is why you didn't score nearly as many points as anybody wanted or expected when you throw for 400 yards.
And look back to the throws on third down. I mean, there were multiple overthrows by 10 feet. We're talking...
I'm a little surprised we're nitpicking a Jameis Winston performance where he throws for almost 400 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. I don't know how that can be a bad performance.
Because I think you're...
He has 11 points.
I think you're focusing on one half of it. I'm focusing on all of it, which is I'm leveraging 400 yards, the two touchdowns. I don't give a rat's ass about quarterback rating or QBR. Those things are... those stats are beyond me. But... I'm leveraging that. And
they're
all
encompassing stats. They take everything into the equation.
Except
that's why
third
they're
downs,
that's why they're sometimes
how many points
that's
you
why
scored.
They're sometimes useful.
Like except like the other stuff.
QBR does take third down into play. Yes, it does.
Well, I have no idea how he didn't get a failing grade for that. So my point is, I'm trying to take it all into equation.
Didn't Deshaun go like 23 straight third downs without completing a third down?
So are we grading against Deshaun?
It wasn't too long ago where I remembered we couldn't complete a third down to save our life.
They lost. What are we doing? They lost. They scored 14 points. Why are we polishing this? That, like, and again,
it wasn't Jameis's fault. If Jameis plays
said
that
he had
game,
a great game.
If Jameis
show me
plays
on the doll
that
where he
game,
had a great game.
They were almost 400 yards, two touchdowns, and no picks.
Stop
that's
focusing
a great
on the
game.
Yards. It's empty
it's a
calories.
Great game. It's not empty calories.
If you throw for 400 right, yards and go, you get
you
in the end zone
Jerry
twice,
Judy his 150 yards
good.
Were just empty calories and didn't mean anything.
Well, I know
like, it was a tie game but, into the
well,
fourth
yes.
quarter. It's not like it was a blowout by the time we got to the second quarter. It was
how
a tie
many teams win if you score two touchdowns in the NFL?
If you score two touchdowns, throw for almost 400 yards, no interceptions, and win the turnover battle by two, you win those games.
No. If you
it's exactly
score,
what Nathan said.
You
we just
score,
had Nathan on. It's exactly what he
if
said.
If you score 14 points in a game. So now I don't want to put it back to two touchdowns because you can kick field goals and stuff like that.
Right, which
if
Hopkins
score,
missed two of them. So you really should have had 20 points.
Not really because that was the same field goal he missed. He missed the 32-yarder and then he missed the 27-yarder.
He missed the other one before that.
So he missed three.
He did miss three. All he right. only got credit for missing two because okay. he was 32. He got taken off the board
oh, that's
for the
right.
penalty.
Okay. All right, Mr. Sassy Pants. But the point is, if you score 20 points, how many games do you win in the NFL?
You lose more than you win.
Okay.
But there's more to the game than just
you're just going Radio Gaga over
it's
almost 400
Radio
yards.
Gaga. It's just I put it out there 5 minutes ago. Am I getting too caught up with 400 yards? I haven't seen a 400-yard performance in a while. Like, that's an excitable thing. And I just don't look at that game and say Jameis at the end of it should look at himself like he let the team down in any sort of way or he didn't play a good game or anything like that.
No,
like,
no, you said he should look at him and he had a great game.
I think
and
Jameis left that thinking like that was prime Jameis. Like, that is as good as – and this is – you got to measure it off Jameis at some point. That is as good as Jameis is going to ever give you. That was it.
No, I mean, Jameis actually
really
can
good.
Throw for more than two touchdowns
but
in a game.
A 110 passer rating is really, that's good. That's very good, Nick. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
There wasn't a big bonehead play. Yeah, he missed a couple third downs. That's the best you got at your criticism? He missed a couple third downs?
Not a couple. They were 25% on third down.
How many of those were runs? How many of those were
two,
runs, by the way?
Wait, real quick. And they scored two touchdowns. So I'm here to say he had a fine game. All right, I'm not like he was the least of the problems on Sunday, but if that's it, okay, if we really want to be honest about it, if that isn't good enough to win on a Sunday against a bad Saints team, that's
it might
that's
not
even
be
more
because
concerning.
Of your defense though. That has nothing to do with Jameis or the offense in any sort of way. That is 100% the defense. When the
points.
Saints are averaging 7.5 yards on the ground, you're not beating anybody. No matter what you do on the offensive side of the ball.
If you threw for 400 yards in a game, I would expect you to have something close to 35 points, to more touchdowns on the board than two. And again, it's not all on Jameis. But one of the reasons why he got the opportunity to throw for almost 400 yards is they weren't running the ball. So that's where the empty calories come in.
But they weren't effective with running the ball. I mean, Jerome Ford was 5 carries for 10 total yards.
But
you averaged 3 yards a carry.
If they had ran the ball with any impunity, or if, I don't know, before like halfway through the third quarter, they decided to go back to
Mitch.
I
mean, they gave up running the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they did. If you had ever tried to approach balance in this, he probably would have thrown...
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Honestly, you probably would have scored more points if you had actually committed to the run at any point. post.
You got 20 carries in there for 66 total yards.
Yeah, and you abandon it for a full quarter.
No, I agree.
So, like,
I agree. Which so I want you to, by the way, at some point, we need to look up how many of those third down plays were runs. Because if you're going to hang on to this, I need to dive into it.
So you need like four? What's the difference between four?
I don't know.
Four errant passes and six?
I don't know. I just didn't know we could only judge quarterbacks off of third down conversions.
Well, I said third down, fourth down, and how much they score.
I'm just going to remember the moving forward.
Yeah,
how we judge quarterbacks is just
part
third down
of my argument that I'm picking apart instead of the whole argument that I'm making, which is
what's
you were bad
argument?
In situational football and you scored 14 points. Cool. You get nothing. You got a 21 point loss. You know,
that was way better than any one of us could have said for Jameis.
You got fluffed by New Orleans. I mean, what more could one want other than an actual win?
The defense was so bad, Nick. The defense was so bad.
But they were good for three quarters. Like, we're moving the goal here. If we just want to be excited about it because it's better than Deshaun, I'm sorry. Miss me with that. It's a lost season. He played reasonably well.
It's
played
a lost season.
Fine. He didn't play great. All right, you don't get to score two touchdowns and everyone. I'm not handing you a Lombardi Trophy. All right, he's a goofball. He's not going to be here next year.
He is a goofball.
Yesterday changed nothing. It was a fun performance. As a matter of fact, it was a fun and fine. The double F's. It was a fun and fine performance.
Fun is so condescending in that moment, though.
No, it wasn't. For three
Jameis
quarters,
is fun
I was enjoying
throws,
it.
If he throws seven interceptions, Jameis is still somehow
fun. No, that's
fun.
Your perception that I'm being condescending. I'm not. When I'm calling him a goofball, I am being condescending. When I'm saying that was fun, yeah, guys, I think that's about the best we can accept. You're super competitive for most of the game. It looks fun. But in the end, if you throw for 395 yards and you have two touchdowns on 11 drives, and the one thing that you can, the place where you make up for the margins is on third and fourth down, like what are we doing here?
He had David Njoku often. Jerry Jeudy was the best we've seen Jerry Jeudy be all season long.
Yards.
I mean, Cedric Tillman, Elijah Moore with that catch in the end zone. Like, he gave me a lot of hope that this wide receiver core that we had talked about and had put so much into that we'd all just written aside. He gave me a lot of hope. That, like, maybe that's not a completely dead project. Like, there's a lot of good there.
Yeah, but I always had hope about those receivers. I always thought Jerry Jeudy and Cedric Tillman and David Njoku, I always thought most of what was going on with them was they've had, I mean, unacceptable level of quarterback play. They got something broaching acceptable, and they looked fantastic. It's almost like if guys are wide open and a quarterback can hit them 60% of the time, it's going to look good. So I'm not, again, I want to be real clear. It was a fine game. It was a fun game. But if you put up 395 yards and you only score, quote unquote, only two touchdowns, guys, at some point we're getting excited about window dressing.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay. I just remember last week you said throw for 250 yards, two touchdowns and no picks. You're going to give him his flowers. He threw for 395.
And I said he's fine.
Two touchdowns and no picks.
What flowers are you looking for other than fine?
You got nothing.
Do we got to get the ass cheeks out like Tyson and I give him a smooch on each one?
Maybe that'd make me feel better.
What are flowers to you? Do I have to call
flowers
them?
It's fine performance. It was a good performance.
That's literally what I just said. I said it's a fine performance.
I misspoke there. I meant to say you like good to great. Give me good to great. Fine is not, that was not fine. That was much better
than fine.
What's
the difference, by the way? Because now we're just arguing
semantics.
Well,
now we're just going in between the
in-between. What's the difference between fine and good?
You want me to quantify it?
Yeah, I would like to know.
I think fine is like 175 yards, one touchdown, no pick. I think good is maybe like 225, maybe two touchdowns, no pick. And I think the great territory is around 275, couple touchdowns, no interceptions. And then you give your team a real chance.
I think
he gave the team a real chance.
I think you're putting a lot of stock into yardage. And
no interceptions. And he did throw multiple touchdowns. I know it wasn't seven for you, but he did throw multiple touchdowns.
It's not, no, 14 points. That's how much the offense put up there, with or without the kicker. No, without the kicker.
It's definitely without the kicker.
14. It's 14. Like, okay. Like, Brian
Hoyer.
You win most of those games.
Not scoring
two touchdowns.
I think that's what I need. I need the acknowledgement that you win most of those games the way that Jameis played that game.
On the bar for Jameis. That's what you want to do. You want to lower the bar and be like, you know what? That's a great game. For Jameis.
Well, what else am I doing this year?
Half this town is trying to evaluate whether Jameis is going to be
the bridge. Gave me a chance to evaluate at least the wide receivers. Last week, I don't want Jameis
as
the bridge.
You're not, but everyone else is going to try and turn this into, and not that this is your concern, everyone's going to try and turn this into a, hey, Jameis, no, you scored. Focus on the points scored.
No, the points scored isn't everything. It's a part of it,
yardage.
But it's not everything.
Martin McSports, I don't think that's his legal name, saying the fact he had 400 yards, no INTs, spread out receptions to the entire receiving core, has only quarterbacked on this team three times, is freaking great. Okay. All right. I think great is winning. I think great is scoring more than two touchdowns. But you know what? Woo! 395 yards. We got him. If only we could have got a 396.
Woo!
And everything I wish the Browns were next on 92.3 The Fan. You not seen The Frog?
Took me 14 games, but I think I found a way in.
Have you seen The Frog? The Frog is very... I do not know what The Frog means. I don't know what The Frog is happening.
We don't even know where The Frog came from.
Nope. And then Moondog's
started, and then
the Frog.
It's just there. Also, by the way, we'll talk about it later on, but like they demoted The Frog, I thought.
Wait, what?
13-0, The Frog was on the court dancing with everybody. 14-0, he was in like the corner dancing with the people that do like the breakdancing stuff during the games. I don't know.
Wasn't he back on the court for 15-0? I thought so. I thought that's what I saw on Sunday.
Wait, maybe I'm missing it up. Hold on.
I think you are. No. They did definitely. He was relegated to one part
they
of the court.
They put him in the corner at one point.
Yeah, they put Baby in the corner. You never put Froggy in the corner.
How do you put Froggy in the corner?
They did, but I think on
they
Sunday,
let him back on?
He was all the way back.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I got one reason why I think the Frog is a really good thing for this team, okay? Can we do that as the tease? Can we have the most ridiculous tease in radio history? I got one good reason why the Frog is everything the Cavs need.
Can't you give the Frog away now and we'll give your tease on why you're bleeping on the streak in 15 minutes?
Yeah, we can do this. Okay. Right. The dog chain was the dumbest thing this Cavs team had ever seen in their lives. They tried to rally around the dog chain, but they're not a dog chain group.
Yeah, they don't have a dog.
They don't have
they don't
a dog,
have
in,
dog
them.
In them.
Yeah, they just don't.
They're
sorry.
Too nice.
I mean, I think they have that dog in them. I don't know. But they got like, you know, the little...
More of a chihuahua. Maybe?
Yeah, it's a little guy. It doesn't... Not a lot of bite there. They're too nice of guys. As
clearly
evidence
they haven't
by,
met a chihuahua. They got some bite in them.
By David Aldridge and his whole article, right? And so they needed something that wasn't going to be forced. There is nothing worse than trying to be something that you're not, Nick. It's like when I try to make a sexual innuendo.
Yeah.
That's not my thing. That's
it's
your
my lane.
Thing.
Yeah.
That's your lane. If I make it, it just sounds weird, you know? So I really do feel like getting away from the dog chain, that was great. That wasn't who they were. That was fake. It was phony. It was Fugazi. None of it mattered. Leaning into the Frog, which is so weird. I saw a quote from Jared Allen. Jared Allen was like, why do you have a frog? He's like, well, it's Cleveland. What answer is that? They're just
it's the best answer.
They're
that's
just a
what
bunch
that is.
Of weirdos, and the Frog is weird, and that's what makes it great. It's kismet, and I love it.
So there's always a point in every party or every time you're at the bar, if you're there super late, where you know that things have definitively got too weird to be there.
Okay.
And it's usually like a grown man shown up and a baby, and everybody thinks it's funny.
Was that you?
Like, no.
I feel like you would maybe show up to the party and do something.
No.
Like I saw this story with McConaughey.
Uh-huh.
I went back and watched that the Bert Kreischer podcast that you referenced last week.
Two bears, one cave.
And one of the stories he told was the first time he met him, McConaughey was just wearing swim goggles to a party. No
See?
Pool in sight.
Yeah.
He just put on swim goggles and swim trunks and showed up in the front door.
Objectively funny. Guy showing up to the party with goggles. People showing up cosplaying. Like, these are all signs that maybe you've hit a level of weirdness that you can't relate to. That's a sign it's time to leave the party. This is like the Frog is that, except no one's too weird to leave the party.
The Frog is matching the party's vibe.
Yes. The Frog is like, oh my God, how have we never had a frog before?
I love it. The Frog is perfect. They're weird. The Frog is weird.
Now, there's no way to transition out of this, so I won't. The Chiefs-Bills game last night was everything I want with the Cleveland Browns. It was an insane rivalry. It was years and years of building. It was, you know, cold-ass weather with great football. I mean, it was mano a mano. It was the home fans losing their minds. It was, I mean, the best of the best quarterback play. A great head coach versus a former student who's kind of an okay head coach. I'd say a fine head coach in Sean McDermott. It was everything. And every time I watched
the
Bills.
He's the 175 passing yards of a head coach.
He really is. Every time I watched the Bills and Chiefs play, regular season, postseason, whatever, I'm reminded of how far the Cleveland Browns are away from the thing that I've wanted for the Cleveland Browns for 25 years.
It's playing a good game is what you're talking about here.
No, not a good game. A regular season game with which feels like a playoff game. Like, that's like, it felt like the AFC title game yesterday. It wasn't.
Here's what I'll tell you, it wasn't. And here's what I'll tell you, as I was watching the game, I knew the outcome before the game even was over. The Bills have now won their fourth straight against Kansas City. I'm resigned to the fact, because the Bills can't beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, I think Kansas City just does not do everything in their powers to win the game against Baltimore or Buffalo. And what I mean by that is what Andy Reid will call and what he won't call, I think, is night and day in the playoff games and then the regular season games. I think Andy Reid holds back in these games. I don't think he cares about winning a regular season game, even if it had playoff vibes against the Bills, because he knows if it's going to make you that much better when you take him out in the postseason, not reveal any of your cards, you win the war and not the battle. And that's what we've seen now. Four straight Bills wins against the Chiefs in the regular season. Zero playoff wins for the Bills against the Chiefs in the postseason. I think the jury's out.
I do think that, I think just smart teams always save something for later.
I think he saves everything for later. I think he legitimately almost even toys with Buffalo and lets them believe that they are closer than they are.
I think that's myth-making. I don't think that's real.
I think at times he completely disguises everything that he is ever going to do in the postseason, and if that makes him 25% less of a team during that game, who cares? Meanwhile, Sean McDermott treats it like it's a Super Bowl.
I think Josh Allen treats it like it's a Super Bowl. And in fairness, Mahomes wanted that. If you saw, like, they've just have not fully unlocked Mahomes most of this season.
That was one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen in my life, in the opening drive.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say the last one, no, where it was just a desperation.
The opening drive one was awful.
Even Allen had a great one to a tight end, wide opening, just missed him. Like, threw it right in front of the guy's face, and the guy fell on the ground. I can't remember their backup tight end's name. But with that being said, I agree to some extent. But you can tell Mahomes wanted it. You can tell the players are in on the rivalry, even if the coaches are holding something back.
If I was doing radio in Buffalo, what I would try to sell Buffalo fans was Josh Allen on that 4th-and-3 play. That's what I would sell people, because that's a time in the past where I think McDermott wouldn't have gone for the 4th-down play. I think he would have been conservative. I think he would have tightened up. He didn't. Allen turned it into a touchdown. And I think little things like that that you saw throughout the game, that was an encouraging thing if you're a Bills fan. But I just don't know. I mean, listen, you get yourself excited. You want to make it a postseason atmosphere, all these type of things. If I'm a Bills fan, I'm like, great, we beat them in the regular season again. Like, I'm happy we did that, but it's four straight times. Can we get them in the postseason?
I think you're saying that if you're a Bills media member. I think fans, you embrace those kind of wins. Knowing the history there, I think that's a media thought, not a player thought. But I do think that 4th-down call, that is transferable.
That was gutsy.
That is a coach.
That is something that McDermott he'd not ever done that previously. In the past, he would not have done that.
And actually, after the game, they were like, "Why'd you do that?" And he's like, "I'm not going to do that. You don't beat Pat Mahomes by playing for field goals." And I think every Bills fan in the world, and just people who've observed this team for the last 4 years, said, "Why'd it take 4 years for that, Sean?"
I mean, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Can I tell you another reason, though?
Sure.
I also think he's really confident in Joe Brady, and I don't think he's been confident in any coordinator since
Brian
Dable.
He was confident with Brian Dable. Yeah.
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 But, like, I don't think that game or, well, or
just
even...
just an easy way to just throw down Dorsey there.
Even early in the Joe Brady thing last year, I don't think he had that confidence. I think that thing's humming the way it was with Dable for a while there. 216-474-0092. I don't think you or I do this, but do you guys think the Chiefs are lesser than the Bills? Is that what yesterday proved? And we will get back to the Cavs. We've gone streaking, we've gone cupping, and now JP thinks he's found some sort of flaw in the Death Star on people enjoying the streak who think the Cavs are going all out to get the streak. That's next on 92.3 The Fan.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.